Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
This week on Lunchbox MB, if something is made with mustard, you can describe it as synapisitic.
In the 1830s, tomato ketchup was sold as a cure for diarrhea.
And there's a traditional Mexican sauce made from salt and ground up agave worms.
It's condiments! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, I'm a chef and food writer, and I'm here with QI Elves, Manu and Jack.
Hello.
Hi Rosie.
Hi.
We understand your fridge is 80% condiment, is that right?
It's 80% condiment. I live a life completely dominated by condiments.
Amazing.
There's at least two shelves just of condiments.
I've seen your fridge actually, and I can agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can attest to that. I've often actually thought about like how condiments, especially in glass jars, like if they're half full, they're using up the same amount of space in your fridge, right? Mm-hmm. Someone needs to invent that packaging that gets smaller as you use more of it.
Shrinking packaging.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tomato purees managed to do it.
So we're like surrounded by condiments on the table.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. Most of them would fit in a squeezy tube.
Let's get into the thorny question. Right, what defines a condiment? Because I found a lot of debate here. Personally, I think it's got to be added after the meal is cooked.
Mm-hmm. That's so controversial.
Well, the whole thing's controversial. I'd say usually it's a fluid, although salt and pepper also count.
We're not
salt and pepper do not count.
No.
Really? I found loads of definitions that said salt and pepper.
Yeah, I know, but
count.
I don't agree with those. So there's not salt on the table.
This is not a democracy.
To finish, those are my main factors are it's usually added after the meal is cooked and it's usually a fluid.
To challenge you on that.
Please.
When you add Worcestershire sauce to something as it's cooking then, is it then not a condiment when you're cooking with it?
Correct. It's about how you use it.
So what's it? What is it when you're cooking with it?
It's an ingredient.
It's an ingredient or a flavouring enhancer. Seasoning, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I that's not like a totally impossible.
Same with salt, right?
Rationale. I do see what you mean about like it has to land on the plate as an addition, you know?
And actually looking around, none of them are, I mean, some of them are fridge temperature, but none of them are like hot. I think if they were hot, they'd be a sauce.
I was reading a really good article on the Kitchen website and they interviewed a bunch of chefs with this exact question in mind. So they got them to define what they thought a condiment was. And there are some common themes. The first one is exactly what Jack said about it being used after a meal is prepared.
Right. Question, does that mean it's optional?
Exactly. So another thing about condiments is that they're optional and unnecessary.
Interesting.
So in that way, it's like choose your own adventure. It makes the whole eating experience highly individualized.
Yeah.
I think specifically for me, like chili sauce is a really good example. Like different people have different heat thresholds. You have like that complete control how it. Yeah. Another key component to any condiment is that they tend to be really well seasoned. So it's not something you'd eat on its own.
Oh,
because it's doing like a lot of. It's punching. It's and like lifting.
Yeah. I suspect as well quite a few condiments didn't start as condiments. They started as sauces and then devolved into a sauce that is used as in a condimentary way. Condimentary is the adverb of condiment. Is it an adverb? I don't know.
Is Nutella a condiment then?
Yes.
Yeah, if you use it in a condimentary way.
Jams and spreads.
Jams and spreads, yeah.
By our definition, if you put a teaspoon of jam on the side of your roast dinner and you eat your roast dinner with it, it is therefore a condiment.
Yeah, true. I'll take that.
You have used it in a condimentary way. In the most condimentary way.
Perhaps the etymology will shed some light.
Take us through it.
I don't have it.
Manu, take us through it.
There we go. It's from the Latin condimentum, which is a word for spice, seasoning, or sauce.
Pretty clear.
Yeah. From condire, to preserve, pickle, season, put fruit in vinegar, wine, spices, etc.
And interesting that it's condire in Latin, because now in French, conduire is to drive.
I know, that's why I'm thinking. I'm
to like, drive something into Flavor Town is a.
I'm like, was that helpful?
Gaius Fierius, yeah.
Okay, I have a quiz.
Okay.
Yay!
Let's do it. I love a quiz. So,
can you tell me what is in some famous condiment classics? So, brown sauce.
It's got water, sugar, and brown.
No, I'm not taking that one. What's the brown? What is in
brown?
What's the brown?
Isn't it molasses?
Yeah, molasses heavy.
I know what's in it because I once couldn't find this ingredient, so I added HP sauce as a substitute. Uh-huh. I think it was in a pad thai. Tamarind.
Yes.
Yeah. Great shout.
Yeah, so that's it particularly is. In HP. Yeah. I also didn't know this. Houses of Parliament is what the HP stands for.
And I also saw a study. So there was a YouGov poll in 2016, shortly after the EU exit referendum, known as Brexit. That's a weird way to describe it. But they basically tried to find the brands most associated with either the Leave campaign or the Remain campaign. The top three for Remain voters was BBC.co.uk, BBC iPlayer, and Instagram.
Whoa. No.
And then the top Leave voter brand was HP Sauce.
Wow.
Followed by Bisto and ITV News.
That is so classic.
It does check out. Yeah. Apparently, according to the label, it's made in the Netherlands.
Which is surprising because it is like got the Houses of Parliament on the front. And it's like I said, the most Brexity brand. It's
Brexit
like pure British icon.
I think the Heinz group own HP. And I think a lot of Heinz products are made in the Netherlands. Let's have a look.
Going to America now. Ranch.
Yeehaw, let me get my accents out.
It's another mayonnaise-based one.
Any ranchy guesses?
I actually really don't know. It's got green bits in.
Dill. I believe dill pickle is used, or at least certain, I use that.
Ooh.
Dill pickle juice, dill pickle stuff. Garlic. Sometimes onion, maybe, as well.
Mm-hmm. It's the sour cream and the buttermilk.
True.
The, like, sourness of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was invented by someone who owned a dude ranch, which I didn't know what that was. So
ranch.
It's basically an adventure ranch for city people who want to come ride some horses, pretend they're cowboys. But yeah, he used to serve it in his cafe, and then it like got so popular, and that's where ranch dressing comes from.
I feel like someone should make a family tree of condiments. In fact, should we do that? We'll put it on the website.
Yeah, let's do that.
You print that, put it in a nice frame on Etsy.
I will buy that.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay, so I think we all know which one's my favourite. I've spoken about it pretty much every episode we've ever recorded. But Jack and Manu, if you only had one condiment to live with, to eat, which condiment would it be?
Soy sauce, I'd say.
Yeah, good shout.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I love mustard.
Mustard, that is
I'm
a good shout.
Mustard.
Very diverse.
Nice.
Thank you. What do you think the most popular condiment in the UK is, according to a 2021 survey?
A survey? Tartare sauce on a survey, please. I think it's going to be a surprise. I don't think it's going to be ketchup. I think it's going to be vinegar.
No, I go for tomato ketchup.
It is tomato ketchup.
Damn it!
50%. So mayonnaise is second.
That's right.
Barbecue sauce is third. Salad cream fourth. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really glad not to see salad cream on the table. I hate salad cream.
Fifth, mint sauce.
I can see they obviously there aren't huge sales, but like if you're thinking of a condiment that you really like the combination of lamb and mint sauce is really good.
One of my favourites now is Lancashire sauce. Do you remember we got sent this?
So is it akin to Worcestershire sauce?
It's trying to be Worcestershire sauce.
Very similar to Worcester sauce, but it's vegan.
Oh.
So Worcester sauce has anchovies in it, I think.
Yeah.
This has no anchovies. It's got a beautiful, like, almost curryish kick. Thank you very, very much. Lancashire sauce.
The Lancashire sauce.
Oh, yeah. It kind of smells like chip shop curry sauce, but vinegary. So it's actually making my mouth water.
Mm.
Oh, my whole mouth just filled with saliva.
That is a real endorsement.
Oh,
so,
it smells amazing. So that on a battered sausage is insane.
I bet. I actually bet that is right.
It is good.
I spent many happy years in Sheffield. Mm. Their biggest cultural export, apart from Sean Bean, is Henderson's Relish.
Delicious. Ooh.
Which is also recommended as the vegan alternative to Liam Perrins. It's the Worcestershire sauce, but it's not got anchovies. I think it's a bit, sorry Sheffield, I love you very much, but I do think it's quite overblown. It's basically someone was like drinking the pickled onion juice and was like, let's bottle this and sell it.
And then going the other way is Gentleman's Relish.
Gentleman's Relish, RIP.
Yeah.
They stopped selling it this year.
No.
In May 2026.
Why?
My late granny loved Gentleman's Relish, and she had one that sat just at room temperature in her, like, on her toast tray for her breakfast every morning. And I was like, I'm not sure that's supposed to be at room temperature, granny. It's an anchovy sauce for anyone who didn't know.
It's like an anchovy pate with
spices. It's a pate. It's in a little very sweet little tin, white tin.
To be fair, I don't think they changed their branding since 1828 when it was invented. And like as of this year, 2026, no longer made. I mean, it does sound like a euphemism, gentleman's relish, you know. You can't imagine coming up with that today, so that's probably done it a bit of a death. And also, I think it was popular with old people. Mrs. Beaton references it. That's how old it is.
Beaton!
She said, an excellent bonne bouche, which enables gentlemen at wine parties to enjoy their port with redoubled gusto.
What's a bonne bouche?
Bonne bouche, I guess, it means good mouth. It must mean just something tasty to enjoy.
I think it's a little nibble. It's kind of like the opposite of a palate cleanser in the sense of like, it's something that basically like burns everything out of your mouth. It's so potent.
But is it a favourite condiment of James Bond writer Ian Fleming?
Ooh.
Who was friends with my granny.
Really? Oh my God, she might have got
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Ben, I've been reflecting a lot lately on how many big life moments our listeners have experienced with us.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
They've watched us go from dating shows to engagements, weddings, babies, buying homes. Every stage comes with new decisions.
The milestones are the fun part, but the planning is where things get real.
That's why Klarna stands out. Klarna gives people smarter tools to help manage everyday money with flexible ways to pay, cash back that builds automatically, everything in one place, and support that makes everyday decisions feel less overwhelming.
Since life moves so fast, the right tools can help you feel more confident. Download the Klarna app today or visit Klarna.com to learn more.
California resident loans made or arranged pursuant to a California finance law license, NMLS number 1353190. Klarna balance account required to be eligible for cashback points. Limitations, terms, and conditions apply.
Nix. That's KNIX leak-proof underwear isn't just for one moment. It's for all the everyday moments you didn't realize leak-proof underwear could make easier. Maybe it's day one of your period. Maybe it's a long travel day. Maybe it's hot outside, you're on the move, and you just want to feel fresh. Their leak-proof underwear comes in a range of absorbencies, from light to ultra, and helps protect against periods, light leaks, sweat, and everyday surprises. And because they look and feel like real underwear, they're soft, invisible under clothes, and machine washable. No extra hassle, no complicated routine. Just dependable protection you can wash and rewear. See why millions have made the switch to leak-proof underwear. Visit Knix.com, that's KNIX.com, and use code FLOW15 for 15% off. That's KNIX.com, code FLOW15.
Okay, it's time for our first lunchbox, and that's going to be me today. And guess what, guys? I'm finally getting to do an entire section on mayo. I want to tell you how mayonnaise is made, because it is literally something I think about all day, every day. And I'm going to talk about the industrial version and the homemade version.
Nice.
Today, I have brought with me two types of mayonnaise.
One, you spoil us,
was made by Hellmann's, purveyors of fine mayonnaise since 1913.
Nice.
It's my preferred shop-bought mayonnaise. I've also brought some mayonnaise that I made this morning by my own fair immersion blender.
Oh, nice.
And I wanted to see if we can tell the difference.
Oh, I bet we can.
Well, immediately.
They're quite similar,
Jean. Is slightly lighter than the other.
Yeah, one
of
them is a bit more yellow.
I think just from the look of it, I know which is which.
Okay, well, we bought some chips, some lovely hot chips to dip in our mayonnaise. Okay. Again, one of the most ambrosial foods of all time is a chip dipped in mayonnaise, I think.
It is good.
That is fantastic.
That is good. And that is Rosie's. Okay. 100%. I feel like the first one is more delicate and, like, richer somehow. And the second one is a bit more...
You've done a really good job because it is harder than I thought to tell the difference. But yours, I think yours is the first one I tried, the one on the left, and it's so much nicer.
Manu?
Same.
You are right. I agree with you, Jack. When I made it, because I rarely make mayonnaise, just because I think that, I mean, I love Hellmann's, and that's maybe because I'm just conditioned to love Hellmann's. Like, I've used it my whole life. It's a flavour I really associate as a mayonnaise flavour. But when I made that today, I was literally like, that tastes exactly like Hellmann's. Like, that tastes really good. You're right, it isn't as sweet. And actually, the ingredients are not the same. So what do you think's in my one?
So I think you add, is it just the egg white? Well, and then you add vinegar or lemon juice, and then you add oil slowly while you're zhuzhing it around to make an emulsion.
So, it's a whole egg.
Oh.
But you can also just make it with egg yolks. You can make mayonnaise with just acid, egg yolk, and oil. But most people use a bit of mustard. So in mine, there is a Dijon mustard.
Which is why it's a bit yellow.
In the Hellmann's one, so I looked into how industrial mayonnaise is made. And what they do is what they create, like, a flavouring slurry.
You've got to work on the branding there.
where they basically mix, like, a load of artificial flavours together. White vinegar, salt, spices and starches. And a lot of that is actually just for long-term stability. Because obviously this is a very shelf-stable product. They use paprika in the Hellmann's one. You never know. It doesn't taste like paprika.
No.
In fact, I was actually quite sure. I watched a video on how it's made on YouTube. And the colour of this slurry is literally dark brown.
Really?
And then they mix it. So they use a high shear blending thing, which is essentially the same as my immersion blender method, which I will describe to you in a second. And it goes white, like it goes bright white. There's so much oil and there's so much egg. It takes a completely different color. It's kind of insane. So for my homemade mayonnaise, I basically followed a technique which is a lazy technique, but is very, very effective if you do it correctly. The old-fashioned way to make a mayonnaise is to whisk slowly oil into your eggs and acid and potentially mustard if you're using it. And basically what you do is you create an emulsion. An emulsion is a mixture of water and oil, two things that do not mix. They have been emulsified together, and that is forcible. Like, that is a very, like, unnatural state for them to be in. You have forced them into that state.
Forced them to mix,
So there's either an oil in water emulsion or a water in oil emulsion. Vinaigrette is a water in oil emulsion, and you know it because it's very thin, like it's not thick typically, whereas a mayonnaise is oil in water emulsion. Okay.
Is that to do with the ratios? Mayonnaise
it's to do with the ratios.
Mayonnaise
is mostly oil, vinaigrette is the opposite. It's exactly, you're exactly right.
Great. Nice.
So because you're making an emulsion, which is a very unstable substance normally, the blending here is very precise. Like, you do actually have to be careful. Speed is important, space is important. I guess it's kind of like the opposite of what you'd normally use your immersion blender for, like just literally pulverizing something until it is completely pureed.
Right.
Here we're using it as a tool to emulsify. You can do this in a food processor, so that means you don't have to whisk. So you just have your eggs on the blending setting going, and you pour in the oil very slowly. Works very well. But the quickest way is to put all of your ingredients, including your oil, into a relatively narrow vessel, something that is basically only just slightly wider than your immersion blender. Do I need to define what immersion blender is?
That's a hand blender, isn't it? So the immersion blender is like stick blender, hand blender.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. So you basically want something that's not very wide. It needs to be quite tight. So what you do is you put the immersion blender at the very bottom. It must be touching the bottom when you start. And you basically turn it on, and it starts to blend and it whisks everything that's at the bottom. And oil is naturally lighter, so oil comes to the top, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a nice tight vessel, the oil is slowly dragged in and down and is slowly, even though it takes literally like less than a minute, slowly emulsified into this very thick, very bouncy, very voluptuous sauce.
Great.
You cannot just whisk oil and water together and emulsify them. You need something that is an emulsifier, emulsifying ingredient. Mm-hmm. So, funnily enough, in mayonnaise, the emulsifier is actually the egg yolk.
Right.
So eggs are the water, but the emulsifier is also the egg yolk.
It's within the water. Mm. Wow.
Because
what a package.
Actually, egg yolks are also emulsifications. Did you even know? It's infinite. I was doing all of this research and I was like, infinite mayo, 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 mayo. There's an emulsified thing, an egg yolk. And basically, when you make your mayonnaise, you steal the emulsified molecules from the egg yolk to make the emulsification, if you see what I mean. This is a very simplified explanation, but emulsifiers have two functions. They reduce surface tension of water, which makes it easier to mix the oil and water. Mm-hmm. And secondly, once the emulsion is formed, emulsifiers stabilize it by forming little things called micelles. Micelles are spherical structures. Mm. It's a bit like we talked about how yeast, dried yeast, has got dead yeast on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
So micelles are spherical structures that consist of an outer shell of emulsifiers surrounding a droplet of the oil.
Ooh.
Okay. So they kind of suspend it in the water.
Okay.
So those are egg yolks in mayo. But actually, we use something else, which is a brilliant emulsifier. That's what I use today, which is mustard.
Ah.
Another emulsifier, would you believe it, is garlic.
Ah.
Have you ever come across a Lebanese sauce called toum?
Oh,
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Banging.
It's banging. Mm-hmm. So toum is actually the Arabic word for garlic.
Oh.
And toum is nature's vegan mayonnaise. Because there are no eggs in it.
Okay.
And what you do is, instead of using egg yolks, you peel a shitload of garlic. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, for a basic recipe, you'd use 2 heads of garlic.
Wow.
160 grams of garlic cloves. Mm-hmm. Make sure they're nice and clean. Make sure you've taken the inner root out. Mm-hmm. Oil and lemon juice and salt. Those are the 4 ingredients of toum.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it's a slightly different method. Typically, the traditional version is that you would blend your garlic to a fine paste and then you would whisk alternately lemon juice and oil, whichever oil you choose, to make a garlic emulsified sauce.
Lovely.
It's a little bit thicker and it obviously has bits in it because you cannot blend garlic so perfectly that it doesn't have, if you're making a homemade version, perhaps industrially you could. But it's really, really delicious and obviously very garlicky, but we love garlic, like friend of the pod, am I right? I really recommend checking out Julius Fielder's recipe for toum. He is a YouTuber influencer who finds vegan food from around the world and likes highlights it. Anyway,
nice.
Julius Fielder is a great toum maker. Anyway, one thing about making homemade mayonnaise that maybe if you are keen to make it, you should be on the lookout for is to think carefully about what oil you use. Have you ever made or eaten an extra virgin olive oil mayonnaise?
I have, but I learned it was erroneous. You shouldn't do it.
Bitter.
Very bitter.
Yeah.
In industrial mayonnaise, the oil is completely flavorless. Mm-hmm. Actually, any extra flavor you add that is outside of your mustard and your salt and your acid is going to affect that finishing flavor. And extra virgin olive oil is very bitter. So some people make this mistake where they make an extra virgin olive oil mayonnaise and actually it's just not very nice.
Right.
So you use a plain oil. Today I use vegetable. Rapeseed is quite popular.
Mm.
Even just like olive pomace oil or light olive oil is good. Mm-hmm. It's often a misstep that people have.
Yeah.
And the other thing is to try and make sure everything's roughly the same temperature. That really helps when you're emulsifying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Something I often bring up, as you know, I spent 9 months in French culinary school. One of the things we learned about was this principle of the 5 mother sauces.
Oh, can I guess them?
Hollandaise.
Yeah.
Espagnol, bechamel, tomato.
Espagnol. Yeah, actually, you're getting quite a lot of these.
So we got 4. What's the 5th?
Velouté.
Velouté. I don't know what that is.
This is something that was written by Georges Escoffier, who is like the godfather of French cooking. Everyone reveres Escoffier. And he wrote the most celebrated French book on cuisine, which was sort of restaurant-style cuisine, which people still use in culinary schools today. And the mother sauces are basically five sauces that give birth to many other sauces. People argue that mayonnaise should be a sixth mother sauce because mayonnaise is basically so core and has literally thousands, infinite derivatives. Famous ones include tartare, aioli, remoulade, Dijonnaise, ranch, Thousand Island, Marie-Rose, Peronaise, Srirachanaise.
No.
Not the name of it, but you know what I mean? Wasabi mayonnaise. I mean, like, there's literally infinite ways you can doctor a mayonnaise, which is one of the reasons why I love it.
That can be the stepmother sauce.
Aww.
Well, I just think actually Binoff Hollandaise, to be honest, Binoff is Espanol. No one fucking uses it. And just replace with mayonnaise because it's actually just way more important. This is the hill I'm going to die on. Mayonnaise is a mother sauce. Mayonnaise is mother, actually. This is my campaign to add mayonnaise to the mother sauces.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Do you know where the word mayonnaise comes from? Where mayonnaise itself comes from?
Ooh, no.
I do not, no.
Neither does anyone else. But I've got a few theories that I can posit you.
Well, I thought my dad told me that Napoleon's army were stuck in the town of Mayonne, and then he was like, waiter, make me something delicious. And the chef was like, we don't have anything except eggs and oil. And he whipped up mayonnaise. But I suspect that is a complete fallacy.
Well, the version of that version of events that I heard is that it was the Seven Years' War, and it was the Duc de Richelieu who, in 1756, expelled the British from the small island of Menorca by capturing a fortress called San Felipe, which was guarding the port of Mahon. And following this victory, the Duke chef wanted to make him, I assume he was just employed to do so, not necessarily wanted. But anyway, he wanted to make him one of his favourite dishes, which included a sauce of egg and cream. He's French, of course. However, there was no cream on the island of Menorca. So he used olive oil instead and created this emulsion of egg and oil called Mahonnaise.
Sauce mayonnaise.
That is a theory.
Yeah.
There is no real evidence of this.
Yeah, sounds a bit good to be true, isn't it?
Other than in texts 50 years later-ish, the word mayonnaise was used. Ooh, so it was colloquially being used in cookery terms, but no one has any evidence to suggest that is actually how it was made.
So you know when people are like, it's actually pho? Or like, you're saying it wrong. But people do that with mayonnaise. They're like, it's actually mayonnaise.
Well, it's funny you should say that because there is actually a couple of other like versions of what it could be.
Uh-huh.
So in 1808, a man called Grimaud de la Reynière, who is a lawyer and the first food critic, apparently, wrote about the three names that were popping up.
Oh, yeah.
Mayonnaise, mayonnaise, and also bayonnaise.
What?
Oh, is that from Bayonne?
And bayonnaise,
from Bayonne.
As in from Bayonne.
Oh, I love it.
And he really liked the bayonnaise theory. He was like, I believe it's bayonnaise.
It's because not bayonnaise,
he was like, B-A-E. Of course it's Bayonne.
That's when you have
it was very like nationalistic view because basically his theory was the gourmands live in Bayonne. Mm. They're making the delicious ham. Of course they made the mayonnaise. Yes. Of course it's bayonnaise. Call it the bayonnaise.
That's given mayonnaise with a cold.
It's literally mayonnaise if Monica, her friend, had a cold and said it.
Bayonnaise.
And you might have heard of the very, I know you've heard because he's a friend of the pod, Antoine Carême, the French cuisinier expert. He actually writes that it was mayonnaise. So
M-A-G-N-O-N-N-A-I-S.
Like the current French men's footballing goalkeeper is called Mike Magnon.
Right. Well, great. But he said that that was because of the French verb manier, which means to handle or stir. And because obviously mayonnaise at the time, they didn't have immersion blenders, RIP guys, and they were whipping it, they were whisking it. And so there was a lot of stirring involved. Mm-hmm. That was his theory. And then there's one more, which is entertaining, but probably not true. So there was another Duke, the Duke of Mayenne.
Oh.
Turns out there's loads of mayonnaise-sounding words places, in French as well. Called Charles de Lorraine, who at the end of the 16th century was... he was a Catholic fighting in the war against the Protestant king, Henry IV.
Okay.
It was kind of like, you know, Catholics versus Protestants all the time back then.
Yeah.
Anyway, Going into battle, he insisted on his favourite meal of chicken and sauce. And the chicken sauce was apparently mayonnaise.
Oh,
chicken mayonnaise, as we all know, is a protein boy favourite. And you do need a lot of protein for the old war, don't you? So, but, you know, the real, like, tenuous thing is that his name was the Duke de Mayenne, so it was called mayonnaise.
But that one predates the others. I think that's his strongest claim.
But there's no evidence of it.
There's no other.
It's just a theory. It's just like they've drawn upon very, dubious writings.
I feel like the Gutenberg press is quite recent.
I think the best things, you never know where it's from, you know?
Quite. I think it came from heaven.
It came from heaven? I genuinely think it did. Let's have a vote. What version of the word mayonnaise do you like the best?
Bayonnaise. Hands down. Best one.
I do like bayonnaise because it is my bae.
I think it was invented by Radio 5 DJ Simon Mayo.
Right. Okay. Simon, if you did invent it, please write in.
I say boom, 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 let me say wayo. Mayo.
I think it's probably time to move on to our second lunchbox, which, even though I'm looking at it and it's scaring me, I think will be an opportunity to learn and grow. Manu, take it away.
Today, I have brought synapistic ice cream.
Oh.
So, as you mentioned in the introduction, Rosie, synapistic means consisting of mustard, including mustard.
Oh, no.
And I have followed the advice of a mustard sommelier called Brandon Collins.
What a great job.
So he is an American mustard sommelier for the French brand Maille. We've got some of the mustard on the table. And basically, they're trying to grow their product in the US. And one of the ways they're deciding to do this is to have someone in the country who is obsessed with and knows a lot about mustard and does mustard pairings. Anyway, so he says that mustard and vanilla ice cream is a fantastic combination.
Well, I feel like, you know, it's a bit like chili oil. Like, spicy and creamy always works.
Yeah, so he says, apart from adding the beautiful crunchy texture, which I love in a whole grain mustard, which is what we've got on this ice cream today, he says the kind of high fatness of the vanilla ice cream kind of adds that beautiful, like, creamy texture, kind of fights with the acid a little bit in the mustard, because mustard, I will talk about how it's made, is highly, highly vinegary. So,
should we try it?
Let's do it.
I'm so excited for this. It smells like
it's really
a ham sandwich.
Okay. It does smell sandwichy.
I got quite a lot there of mustard.
I can see his point.
Yeah, it's not the worst pairing in the world. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm going to make this when I get home. It's actually way harder to detect the ice cream sweetness with that much mustard. Like, it's really muted.
I'm going to try a little bit. I think I'm enjoying the ice cream bit. And then I get a hit of mustard and I'm like, ooh.
You need to get the ratio right, don't you?
I have ruined a lot of vanilla ice cream doing this.
Anyway. You could have made a small example.
I think for me, the slight issue I have with it is that even though there are no alliums in mustard, to me it tastes faintly oniony or garlicky, and that's where it doesn't work with a sweet thing for me.
It's got that, like, pungent, kind of lingering.
Shots. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, Brandon. I'm not convinced.
She's not buying it.
But I do love mustard, and I had so much fun researching this. So mustard, table mustard, comes from crushed mustard seeds. And then you add water and vinegar and lots of seasonings. And that is how we get the condiment that we have just put over ice cream, and it doesn't work at all.
And do we boil them?
No. So
no.
A lot of the heating comes when you're crushing it.
I see. Okay,
so
right.
So you get a lot of milling. That kind of milling makes the heating. So you're not, like, cooking them straight up.
It's like kinetic heating.
Yeah. So there are three types of mustard seed. There's yellow, brown, and black.
Oh.
And they all come from kind of like the Mediterranean, Central Asia, North Africa, and Southern Europe, respectively. And we think it's the oldest condiment in the world.
Yeah, so this is, I can believe that.
Oh, are you sure?
Well, this is excluding salt. This is when, for me, salt kept coming up in my research. Yeah.
And also, if you think of a true condiment being an addition rather than an ingredient, vinegar, I would also argue, could be very, 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 very old. But mustard is, like, intentional condiment.
Yeah. Exactly. So there is evidence of mustard. Well, mustard is being spoken about in ancient Indian and Sumerian texts dating back 3000 BCE. The Greeks were obsessed with mustard. The Romans were obsessed with mustard. It's mentioned in the Bible, like, wow, many, many times. And the Romans were the ones that actually took mustard, making to France. And then the French ran with it. And that's why we have Dijon today. Oh, that's Thank you very much.
Dijon, exactly. From the town of Dijon in Burgundy.
Mm-hmm. Although most of the Dijon we eat today is not made in Dijon.
Yeah. Oh, is it not like a protected
got a PGI at all. Oh. So you can make Dijon anywhere in the world. Wow. And this is something that was actually spoken about on Fish not that long ago. Most of the Dijon that might produce, that's made in a little nearby commune or town called Chevigny-Saint-Sauveur.
Sauveur sounds like flavour, doesn't it?
Ooh, and it is. It's delicious. And the actual word mustard comes from the kind of method of making it. So the Romans used to mix mustard seeds with the must of the wine. So like really, really young wine. And that's why you have that kind of like vinegary element.
Because I was going to say mustard is a great word. Mm-hmm. It's just a very satisfying word.
It's good.
I love saying it.
Mustard.
Mustard. I actually really want to talk to the French because I just don't understand why they have moutarde as the word for mustard, but not coutarde as the word for custard. Oh. What the hell?
It's crème anglaise, isn't it?
It's crème anglaise. Just call it coutarde, okay?
It sounds a bit rude.
Coutarde? Yeah, it does a bit.
When I talk about mustard, mm-hmm. the colour immediately comes to mind.
Yeah.
So if I ask you, what colour is mustard? What do you say?
Yellow.
It's not yellow.
What?
No, so...
Hang on a sec.
It's kind of like...
To be
like
fair,
a,
that's kind of like multicoloured beige.
It's brown, multicoloured, and you do get yellowish mustard seeds, yeah, but the that? Really, really yellow mustard, they're like a mustard that's literally called yellow mustard, like American mustard.
No, right, English mustard, like Coleman's English mustard is hella yellow.
So, so yellow, and this is often because they dye it with turmeric.
Oh, that's why it stains on my bloody clothes.
No.
I remember hearing on the food program, I think it was Zoe Laughlin said it's got a unique property that means it can't be removed with like a surfactant. You have to physically erode it from whatever it's attached to.
What, turmeric or mustard?
Turmeric.
Oh. Damn.
But this is why I say Dijon mustard, like the famous French one, is a completely different colour and a lot more like brown.
It's a lot browner, yeah.
I was going to ask you, what is the... spice like molecule responsible for?
So this was my biggest question. This was actually one of Bristol University's molecules of the month.
Okay.
If you are interested in chemistry and you have a spare 5 minutes, check out their website, Molecule of the Month.
That's
it's
great.
So fun. So they have a really beautiful explanation of what it is in mustard that is creating that burn, and it's something called allyl isothiocyanate.
Allyl isothiocyanate.
But I'm going to call it allyl I. So it's the same chemical that gives wasabi, horseradish and garlic its really, really pungent burn as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it
That's
works...
That's why you're getting allium, sorry.
Yeah, maybe, so true, yeah. You're right.
Anyway, so it's very similar to capsaicin in that it binds to the same TRPV1 receptors.
TRPV1.
So yeah, so it does create a little bit of that burn. So that receptor basically tricks your body into thinking, oh, hot, if anything binds to it.
Yeah, more on that in the chilies episode.
Exactly. But it also binds to another receptor called TPRA1, mm-hmm. which sends pain and cold to the brain.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not just heat. It is kind of like a little bit...
Brain freeze.
Like exactly.
Menthol is a really good analogy.
So the reason why this particular pain goes straight up into the back of your nose and into your brain is because the molecules, this allyl iso... Blah, 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 the molecule is a lot smaller than capsaicin and a lot lighter, so it vaporizes really quickly in your mouth. So once you've been eating it and chewing it, it goes like... It goes straight into your sinuses. Anyway, so I was also looking into some weird uses for mustard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because something called mustard plaster came up in my research a lot.
Mm-hmm. Is it for walls?
Is it for walls?
As in plastering walls?
No, it's not.
Okay. Is it for wounds?
It sort of. So it's usually used for sore muscles and joints. So this is a kind of ancient remedy.
Like ancient deep heat.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of grind it up and then you put it on your sore area.
Salve.
Careful.
Yeah.
Don't get it in the wrong sore area. Am I right? You'd be really burning then.
It's meant to kind of help with the pain, soothe the pain, warm it up a bit. And in 2024, there were some researchers at the Savitha Institute of Medical and Technical Sciences in Chennai, and they tested whether this was actually an effective pain relief. So they tested it on people who had like arthritis and all these kind of joint problems, and they found that it did reduce pain, and it was a really good anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial. It has lots of great properties. But the most important thing is you cannot leave it on for too long. So they recommend 15 minutes max. There's another study in 2012 found if you left it on for longer than that, you could get burns, you could get nerve damage, you could get skin lesions. And there was no proper
and then you
way
die.
To, yeah. So don't put mustard on your leg for more than 15 minutes, but under 15 minutes is apparently really good for you.
Hey, Siri, please cancel mustard bath in my diary.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Ben, I've been reflecting a lot lately on how many big life moments our listeners have experienced with us.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
They've watched us go from dating shows to engagements, weddings, babies, buying homes. Every stage comes with new decisions.
The milestones are the fun part, but the planning is where things get real.
That's why Klarna stands out. Klarna gives people smarter tools to help manage everyday money with flexible ways to pay, cash back that builds automatically, everything in one place, and support that makes everyday decisions feel less overwhelming.
Since life moves so fast, the right tools can help you feel more confident. Download the Klarna app today or visit Klarna.com to learn more.
California resident loans made or arranged pursuant to a California finance law license, NMLS number 1353190. Klarna balance account required to be eligible for cashback points. Limitations, terms, and conditions apply.
Nix, that's K-N-I-X, leak-proof underwear, isn't just for one moment. It's for all the everyday moments you didn't realize leak-proof underwear could make easier. Maybe it's day one of your period. Maybe it's a long travel day. Maybe it's hot outside, you're on the move, and you just want to feel fresh. Their leak-proof underwear comes in a range of absorbencies, from light to ultra, and helps protect against periods, light leaks, sweat, and everyday surprises. And because they look and feel like real underwear, they're soft, invisible under clothes, and machine washable. No extra hassle, no complicated routine. Just dependable protection you can wash and rewear. See why millions have made the switch to leak-proof underwear. Visit Knix.com, that's K-N-I-X.com, and use code FLOW15 for 15% off. That's K-N-I-X.com, code FLOW15.
Let's go now to our final lunchbox, and that is you, Jack. What have you got for us today?
It's been on the table the whole time, under your noses. I brought you guys some non-brewed condiment.
Non-brewed?
My favourite condiment.
How is it non-brewed?
Basically, if you go into any UK fish and chip shop, you'll be offered salt and vinegar to go on top, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two of the famous condiments. But what you'll most likely find is this stuff, which can't legally be called vinegar.
I did
so
not know that.
So they're lying when they say you can have vinegar.
But it tastes like vinegar.
Well, that's the thing.
It looks like vinegar. It tastes like vinegar. Oh, it actually doesn't smell that good.
Does it? Can I smell it?
Well, my mouth watered in the worst way.
That's not hot.
So let me describe what vinegar is officially.
Okay.
So vinegar comes from the old French and the modern French, vin aigre, which means sour wine. And basically, it's as old as wine.
We like that.
Mm-hmm. So when you leave wine, it goes sour. Mm-hmm. As long as it's exposed to oxygen, it can promote the growth of bacteria, which are found in the natural environment and will turn your wine into acid.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my top tip is if you've got a half-finished bottle of wine, I know, why would we? And you've also got like the remnants of a vinegar bottle, you can top up that vinegar with fresh wine. And if you leave it for enough days, it will turn into the nicest tasting vinegar you've ever had.
Wait, you top up the leftover wine with fresh wine?
No, so you top up your vinegar with leftover wine.
You mix the
wine.
Two,
oh,
basically.
I see. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, right.
And if you've got any champagne, even better, because champagne vinegar is the nicest thing. Well.
Champagne vinegar is very nice. I actually really like muscatel vinegar.
Ooh, is that quite sweet?
Made from muscat. wine.
Is it sweet? Or is it?
It's kind of sweet, but it's not like overly. It's not like balsamic glazy sweet. Mm. It's just a little bit more sweet than your average wine vinegar.
Very nice.
I've got to be honest though, the one I use the most, sherry.
Sherry vinegar.
I'm a Chezza girl through and through.
But you can basically make vinegar out of anything. So it doesn't have to be wine. Anything with sugars in. Fruit.
Apple cider.
Apples, exactly. That's a famous one. And actually beer.
Yeah.
Malt vinegar comes from the malting process of beer, which I've got here.
That's real malt vinegar, and this is fake malt vinegar.
So chippy vinegar, if it's not fake vinegar, is beer vinegar.
Yeah, usually.
I love it.
Basically, acetic acid defines vinegar, and this non-brewed condiment is acetic acid synthetically made in a laboratory and then diluted. Acetic acid, water, and some colours and flavourings, because it is brown. Mm.
This one says caramel E150.
Oh, there you go. Caramel adds the brown colour.
Mm. So it hasn't been brewed because it's synthetic.
Which is why it's non-brewed condiment. It has a few advantages because it's halal. It's not been made through alcoholic means. And it's delivered in concentrate. And then you dilute it if you're the fish and chip shop. Mm. But occasionally it goes wrong. There was a woman, this isn't funny actually. There was a woman who the chip shop forgot to dilute their non-brewed condiment.
Oh my God.
And so she had a large quantity. I think she might have had a pickled egg or something that was like intensely acidic and it burnt her throat and she got £4,000 in compensation.
Whoa. Really?
Yep. But anyway, I wanted to talk a bit more about vinegar because, like I say, you can make it out of anything. You can make wood vinegar.
No.
Although it's not really safe for human consumption.
Yeah.
It was used in the American Civil War by the Confederates when they were, like, really short on salt and they wanted to cure, like, meats and stuff.
Oh.
But it is really not recommended. These days you can buy it for basically staining your garden fence.
Right, okay.
Because it's like a black treacly stuff.
Definitely don't want to eat that.
It's made from the charcoal making process. So when you burn wood in a very low oxygen environment, it turns to charcoal. Mm-hmm. And then what they do is they get the condensates, all the smoke that comes off. Uh-huh. They let that condense. And then that is wood vinegar.
And then that is brewed into vinegar.
That is the stuff. It's slightly acidic.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Kiwi fruit vinegar, very popular in New Zealand.
Ooh, oh my God, I've never tried that.
No, but you can make it out of fruit, like I say. So it's fitting. I didn't know this was the case, but the kiwis make a lot of kiwis. There's quite a lot of wastage because it's quite a squishy fruit. So occasionally you'll get a shipment and it'll all be bruised or wonky or out of shape. Turn it into vinegar.
I bet you this exists, but I bet a kiwi vinegar hot sauce would be fucking amazing.
Or if it doesn't exist, we should make that.
They make delicious hot sauces out in New Zealand. I remember when I was there many moons ago in 2019, I found one called Kaitaia Fire that I was obsessed with.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And then balsamic vinegar is basically, it's not made from wine. It's made from pre-wine. It's made from grape must.
Is that why it's so sweet? Because the sugars are still in the must.
Yes, exactly. And it's also aged for decades, sometimes centuries.
Whoa.
And in fact, I think it's the most expensive liquid I've ever seen for sale in the UK.
Really?
I went to a fancy oil and vinegar shop in York about 10 years ago. Their most expensive version of balsamic vinegar was £500 a litre.
Whoa.
Wow.
You could buy a little jar of 100 mil for 50 quid. It's crazy.
I think balsamic vinegar drizzle is the biggest red flag for a restaurant that you could possibly show me.
Really?
Like, if you put balsamic drizzle on anything and I see a picture of that, I'm not coming in. Mm. I ain't coming in, guys.
In my head, it's very, like, naughty.
It's so naughty. Yeah. It's also just, can I be honest? I'm going to be rude. Can I be mean for a second? It's just lazy. Find something else that works better. It's just like pouring honey on something. It's so sweet. It's overpowering. It makes everything brown, which I also dislike because I'm a food stylist and I'm sensitive to this kind of stuff. But I just think you could literally dress that with anything else.
Do you think it goes with ice cream? I'm now just looking at all of this.
I don't hate it with ice cream. I prefer it with strawberries because it does actually work with strawberries. And I think we did eat some when we did our strawberry little mini-sode a year ago, at least. It's delicious with strawberries. Look, I'm not saying it's not a beautiful thing in isolation.
No, it is
a
overused.
Good balsamic is delicious. Overused. It's overused, and also Brits are obsessed with balsamic and oil and bread. And it's like, guys, use some butter. It's literally not even eaten like that in Italy. Like, you're like, oh, can I get some balsamic and oil, please? Sitting in the piazza in Rome. They're like, why? Why? Right, that is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. Guys, I have loved recording this episode with you. Thank you for your condiment chat. For the listeners, just to sum up, it's a condiment if you use it in a condimentary way. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, questions, or suggestions for future topics by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
So, Rosie, do you have any passing recipes to recommend?
I think you should check out Julius Fielder's recipe for tomb on YouTube. Nice. It's brilliant and it's delicious. And if anything is delicious, it's garlic mayo.
Is that spelled T-O-U-M?
T-O-U-M. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Onrio, Jack Chambers, and me, Rosie McKean. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
Real value shows up in reliability you don't have to second guess. Like a set of Firestone all-season tires. They're designed to deliver confidence-inspiring wet weather traction and a quieter ride, no matter the road, season after season. Firestone all-season tires. For durability you can count on, just like people count on you. Firestone. Always dependable since 1900.
You know what quality feels like. You can see it in the way a fabric moves. Recognize it in a flawless fit and appreciate it in the details that make our styles unique. That kind of quality doesn't happen by accident. It happens with imagination, creativity, and intention. At Coldwater Creek, it's the design standard we've honored for over 40 years. Our rich mountain heritage has shaped how we think about clothing from the very beginning. With a commitment to quality that never quits. Exceptional fabrics, considered design, silhouettes we've made our own. The signature touches that set each piece apart and styles that are distinctively Coldwater Creek. For a wardrobe you can count on season after season, visit coldwatercreek.com. Shop new arrivals and save 15% on purchases $75 or more with code IHEART.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.